I think some time ago I did mention about the conversation I had about the way medicine men down in Africa were able to come up with new drugs. And I talked to this particular individual down there, and I said, how do they know what plants to use? And he laughed at me, because his father and his grandfather before him were all involved in this magic. And he said, well, the spirits tell them. And certainly over in Ephesians 6 it talks about us not wrestling with flesh and blood. And when we're looking at the news, I just wonder how much we realize and we really understand that this is in fact still occurring, that it is actually a case that Satan is in control, that he is guiding things that take place. And we within the church should understand that, because we have seen a church completely trashed, and it was trashed by somebody who came from Chicago, which is the kind of center of mafia involvement, and the mafia is linked to the Catholic Church. And we think that, oh, well, it's just a coincidence. Or was it just a coincidence? There's an article here. This is the Mail on Sunday from last week. And it says here, Guy Fawkes Night at the Commons is banned to avoid upsetting the Catholics. And Guy Fawkes was a Catholic who, in fact, tried to blow up the Houses of Parliament. To destroy them, to bring the Catholic rule back into the UK. And he was caught and executed. He says, House of Commons authorities have rejected a free fireworks display to celebrate the 400th anniversary of Guy Fawkes trying to blow up Parliament in case it offends the Catholics. The decision, which goes against the rhyme and the reason, must be remembered. Has been condemned as ludicrous political correctness, which may herald attempts to buy Guy Fawkes Night. Now, I know that there are attempts to ban Guy Fawkes celebrations down in Kent, I think it is, where they burn an effigy of the Pope, which is part and parcel. Is it Margate? Sussex, okay. But it says, Kimbolton Fireworks offered to put on a privately financed public display outside Parliament for the anniversary next year. But the move was rejected by the House of Commons Commission, chaired by the Speaker, Michael Martin, who is a prominent Glasgow Catholic. So it is, in fact, against that. And you see several things that occur, and we do not know how much influence the Catholic view is actually having in our government right now. We just cannot really see. We look at it. It's very, very similar in the case of Mr. Tkach. When he came through the worldwide, he made certain changes and certain things happened. And we do not necessarily see the hand that is behind it all. Within Europe also, there are certain things that are taking place. This is from Saturday, that's today. It says, the Euro gendarmes set up to police the world's trouble spots. And it says, the European Union added a fresh arm to its fast-growing military and political machinery yesterday, launching a fighting gendarmerie. Because the gendarmes are the policemen in France, so it's a gendarmerie, for quick deployment to the trouble spots all over the world. So this, now at the moment it's very, very small, but nevertheless it is the beginning of the European arm, which will be going out to police certain areas of the world wherever they feel it necessary to do so. Another very small headline regarding Europe. It says the art show sees Europe as a new Roman Empire. And this is coming from Telegraph last Tuesday. It says the European Union is poised to overtake America to become our premier superpower, according to an EU exhibition launched yesterday in the heart of Brussels. The pop art collage, mounted in a tent outside the European Commission, narrates 50 years of EU history and projects the events into the future in an unusually frank display of the European ambition. So much of the kind of art world, you can do things in art, in songs or in art or whatever, that you cannot necessarily do in public. But it shows the aspirations of the European Union. So segments etched across 80 yards of canvas predict that the 21st century will be the European century as the EU pushes its borders deep into Eurasia, North Africa and the Middle East and comes to dominate world affairs through its vast legal and moral reach. Under the heading of the Roman Empire Returns, so that's the heading of this montage that was being made, it says that the EU will be renamed the Union once it grows to 50 states over the next 3 decades. The United Nations headquarters will be moved to Gibraltar as the EU defends the international order against the American onslaught. So it's very clear where the fight is between America and the EU. The euro will break the overbearing monopoly of the dollar by 2010 as China and India switch their reserves to punish America for its stratospheric deficit. Casting the United States as the villain of modern times, it says the lonely superpower can bribe, bully or impose its will almost anywhere in the world, but when its back is turned, its policy is weakened. It's very interesting just how what this is the kind of ethos that is going around. It's coming out of Brussels. But it's not being publicly mentioned, but it's able to actually be placed on this montage. Entitled The Image of Europe, the display is not a formal expression of EU policy, so in other words, they can't be held to it. But it captures views that can be heard every day in the corridors and the canteens of the Union's institutions. The exhibit was coordinated by the European Commission and sponsored by the European Council. The EU's Dutch presidency said yesterday that it was designed to narrow Europe's iconographical deficit by conjuring up forceful images. And there was a load of Euro babble. But it does show the direction in which they want to go. In that light also, there's another one here from last Saturday, Saturday's Telegraph, which is about East Germany and what is happening over in East Germany. Its title is, in the world news, it says, East Germany's vision of unity fades. So the way in which they are looking for the unity is now being changed. It says, impressive infrastructure cannot dispel the gloom pervading a former communist town. It says, since unification in 1990, in an exodus, the like of which has not been seen in the region since the 30 Years' War in the 17th century, Wittenberg's population has shrunk at an alarming rate from 30,000 to just over 20,000, as the younger citizens have left in desperation to find work elsewhere. The empty houses they've abandoned, as well as vacant school buildings, community halls and libraries, are being demolished by the week. More than a decade after the former Chancellor Helmut Kohl promised the 15 million Easterners blossoming landscapes, unemployment is officially more than 20%, more than twice the national average. In reality, says experts, it could be twice as high. So it could be 40%. It could be 40% unemployment. Now, it's interesting that when you look at the unemployment that occurred just before the Second World War, we were looking at, you know, that being a major reason why Hitler rose to power. It says, next weekend, regional elections in the eastern states of Saxony and Brandenburg will give millions a chance to air their grievances. The polls are expected to deliver the biggest blow yet to Mr. Schroeder's government. He's well aware of how tense the mood is. In Wittenberg late last month, to open the new station, he was pelted with an egg by a demonstrator. It missed, but the message was clear. He later warned, we must try to avoid the confrontation between East Germany and West Germany. But the interesting part was right at the very end, because the end paragraph said this. It says, but for his country, he has a more drastic idea. This is talking about somebody who is a supporter of the right DVU. I'll tell you what we need. We need a little Adolf Hitler who would bash a few heads together and ensure that Germany, East and West, had a common future and that no German would feel like a second-class citizen. Now that's the mood. That's the mood that currently is in East Germany because of an unemployment rate of between 20 and probably 40% in certain areas. And that's, you know, and again, when you look at the things that are happening there and you look at the prophetic side and you also look at the fact that Satan is in charge of this world, there is an unseen hand and it is guiding what is taking place in Europe, and we can see these indicators that are still there. At the same time, there is still the threat within the Middle East. Iran is the latest area where people are, the United States particularly, and also Europe as well, is having second thoughts about the Iranian nuclear threat. This one from the 14th, it says, new Iran threat on nuclear weapons. It says, Iran threatened today, yesterday to begin enriching uranium within a few months, defiantly shrugging off European warnings, that is, European warnings, that Tehran is placing itself at risk of United Nations sanctions. Iran says that it's got the right to make enriched uranium as fuel for civil nuclear power stations, but the West fear that it will use the same technology to make atomic bombs. So Iran is the next, almost on the list, and yet the Americans are well and truly bogged down in Iraq. There's no question of that. I mean, the idea that they won the war when they claimed to have won the war, it just simply wasn't true. They haven't even started the war. Nobody's going to take on the United States frontally. But they're doing what they're doing now, and this is the war that is, you know, sapping America at the moment. On the 17th of this particular article came out, it said, tell the truth on the nuclear weapons, the US then tells Iran. And satellite pictures of possible testing site prompted a demand for ultimatum. America seized on satellite pictures of a possible Iranian nuclear weapons testing site yesterday to demand that Tehran be given an ultimatum to come clean or face United Nations sanctions. This clearly shows the intention to develop weapons, said a senior United States official, after a Washington think tank released its analysis of images of an isolated explosive testing facility at Parchin, about 20 miles from Tehran. It's not exactly the kind of thing I'd like to put 20 miles from the capital, but they don't seem to worry about it the same way over there, it seems. But there are other areas as well that I want to bring to your attention. Before we do, just turn over to Luke 21. Luke 21. Because so often we can get ourselves in a rut, and we can look at certain things, and we can't actually be doing what it's telling us here. In Luke 21, in verse 28, it says, when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draws near. In other words, when you see these things starting to develop, of the things that you were talking, being talked about previously, then look up. And he spoke to them a parable. Behold, you know, look and take notice of the fig tree, and also all the trees. And we go, when we walk down to the village, we look at the beech trees opposite us. And in the springtime, they are. They come out, and they're very, you can see the leaves just about, you know, to start off with, they're just a bud. And they look almost just like a twig. You can't really see, but you can see the potential is there for the leaf. And literally, overnight, it will suddenly, the whole tree will be covered with leaves. Overnight, the whole wood completely and totally changes. But if you're not watching for the buds, which are looking just like twigs, you will not notice that this is about to happen. So it happens very, very quickly when it does. And he says, look at the fig tree, and look at all the trees. When they now shoot forth, you see and you know of your own selves that summer is now near at hand. So likewise, you, when you see these things come to pass, you know that the kingdom of God is near at hand. Truly, I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all be fulfilled. So it's going to happen within a generation. But if we notice over in 1 Thessalonians 5, you know, these are scriptures we know, we've read many times. But in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, coming straight after the resurrection, this passage we read on trumpets, it says, the times and the seasons, brethren. And remember, it's the times, it's the seasons, it's like a branch shooting forth. You've no need that I write to you, for yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. In other words, it is not going to be completely, totally apparent. It's not going to be that the leaves slowly come into view. It's a case that you've got to be watching the twigs and looking for the shoots, looking for the actual buds forming. And then you know that at any second, the whole thing will come out. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as birth pains on a woman with child, which again means and I've brought this out before, birth pains come in waves. So you're watching things rise and to fall, rise and fall. But it's the way in which those pains move closer together and intensify. And that's the again, you're looking at that analogy that's been given there. And they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness. Notice, you're not in darkness. That this should, the day should overtake you as a thief. You're all the children of the light and the children of the day. We're not in the night nor of darkness, therefore don't sleep as others, but let us be alert and be sober. And the word watch there is the same word being alert that you find in Matthew 24. For those that sleep in the night. Those that are drunk in the night. And there's an awful lot of the church members that were formerly with us that are drunk. They're drunk with some kind of spiritual, the wine of the wrath of a fornication, quite frankly. And that, in fact, is happening also with church members, former church members, that are mixed up and completely addled by a different Jesus, a different Christ, an alien Christ from the one that we learnt about. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet the hope of salvation. For God has not appointed us to wrath, but to obtain salvation, to obtain rescue by our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, so that whether we wake, or watch, as the actual word is, or sleep, we will live together with him. One final scripture in this light. Turn over to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew 16. In Matthew 16, the beginning there, the Pharisees were also dealt with by Christ. Because the Pharisees, in verse 1 in Matthew 16, also with the Sadducees came and tempting, desired him that he would show them a sign from heaven. In other words, God, if you are the Christ, you show us a sign from heaven. Show us something in the sky. Allow us to see something in that regard. And I've had people say to me that the signs that we're looking for are the heavenly signs. Then we'll know. You're a good deal too late by the time that occurs. And he answered and said to them, when it's evening, you say, will it be? It'll be fine weather, because the sky is red, red sky at night, because of the dust particles that are in there. And in the morning, it'll be foul weather today, because the sky is red and lowering. You hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. A wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and there's no sign going to be given to it but the sign of the prophet Jonah, and he left them and departed. Now Christ is the same yesterday, today and forever. We have been given the understanding as to what to look for, what to be alert to, and this has been plainly and clearly shown to us. Now, having said that, we also must look. We must be aware. We must be aware not just of something that happened years and years ago, but what is actually happening right now as I speak. What's going on in the world right now? Now, what is actually happening, and this is something which I feel could be of quite grave significance, we don't know until, you know, things develop. But on the 13th, which was just last Sunday, or Monday was it, it says under the World News in the Telegraph, it's North Korea blast leads to fears of a nuclear test. Now this is in North Korea. It says a huge explosion that sent a mushroom clay-shaped cloud more than 2 miles wide into the sky over North Korea, overshadowed Britain's first ministerial visit to the reclusive Stalinist dictatorship yesterday. So as the British actually arrived to this dictatorship in North Korea, this explosion occurred. The explosion near the site of a secret missile silo gave rise to fears that the country had carried out its first nuclear weapons test. Now that's the, I think it was on the Sunday where this this actually occurred. Now, if we just see if I can get the right order of these particular, yes, get this order right. I've got the order mixed up here. So here's from the CNN on the same thing. It says the missile base is near the North Korean blast area. And it says Seoul, South Korea, the country in North, it says, this is coming from South Korea, The country in North Korea, believed to have been hit by a huge blast on September the 9th, is home to an underground missile base that was listed as a possible uranium enrichment site, according to a disarmament think tank. And it goes on to say that there's been no confirmation of the location or nature of the explosion in this particular province. A remote and mountainous region with Western defense experts believe houses key military sites. It's off limited to outsiders, including aid agencies. So nobody can get into this area. So everybody thought it was nuclear. That's fine. The next one, which was on the Sunday, it says North Korean cloud was not a nuclear blast. It says a large cloud that appeared over North Korea in satellite images several days ago was not the result of a nuclear explosion, according to a US official. So they're saying, no, it wasn't nuclear. It was something else. South Korea's Yonhap news agency is reporting a huge explosion shook North Korea's northernmost province on Thursday, producing a mushroom cloud over 2 miles wide. The blast coincided with the anniversary of North Korea's founding on September the 9th, when various military activities were staged. But the U.S. the U.S. official said the cloud could be the result of a forest fire. Somebody's not telling the truth. Somebody really is not telling the truth at all. And it's interesting to then watch this, and you watch this kind of develop. Then North Korea comes out and he says, the demolition actually caused the cloud. This is on the Monday. North Korea has said that a large mushroom cloud seen over the nation in satellite images was a result of a deliberate demolition of a mountain for a power plant. After several days of speculation over the cause of the massive cloud, North Korean Foreign Minister offered the explanation in a meeting with British Foreign Office Minister Bill Rammell. It says the Foreign Minister told Rammell that the large explosion several days ago was part of a planned demolition of a mountain for the construction of a hydroelectric plant, according to a statement on Monday. Now, I've also heard that there's not much water in that area, so there's a slight problem with a hydroelectric plant. It says North Korea's foreign minister says suggestions that there's anything else are lies. And on it goes, justifying this. It's interesting, on the CNN.com, which I copied this down from, they did a survey saying, do you believe this story? 78% of everybody that clicked on it said, no, we don't believe this story. And I clicked and said, no, I don't believe the story as well. Now, here we're looking at, on the Monday as well, it says North Korea says the blast is tied into a hydroelectric plant, and it then, again, it says, in an interview with the BBC, Rammell said Peck told him that it wasn't an accident, that it wasn't a nuclear explosion, that it was a deliberate detonation of a mountain as part of a hydroelectric project. Rammell said that he welcomed the explanation because North Korea is so secretive. He says, if this is a genuinely deliberate detonation as part of a legitimate construction project, then the North Koreans have nothing to fear. And then you get what actually happened then is North Korean foreign minister said the blast was intentional and responding to a request for information from the British Foreign Office. He then said that, somewhere in here I think it was, oh yes, it says, North Korea told Britain's ambassador, David Slynn, that he can visit the blast site as soon as Tuesday to verify its claims that the explosion was part of a construction project. The Press Association of Britain reported Rammell had asked that the ambassadors be allowed to visit the site. So they gave them permission to visit the site. So now we say, right, let's see what happens. Now obviously, if it was a nuclear explosion, you cannot go into that area unscathed. You can't just do that if it's just a normal nuclear explosion. This is why this is significant, because it doesn't seem to have been a normal nuclear explosion. But I can tell you one thing, it certainly doesn't seem to be a construction of a hydroelectric plant either. On Friday, that was yesterday, it says the envoys see the North Korean mystery site. Foreign diplomats have visited a large construction site in North Korea, which Pyongyang says was the cause of a mysterious cloud last week. The diplomats were told that a hydroelectric dam was being built and the cloud was due to explosions to clear the area. But South Korea stoked confusion on Friday when it said that the diplomats were taken to a place well to the east of the original suspected location. So in other words, they were taken up to see this plant, which is in construction, but it wasn't the place where the cloud was. And it goes on, It says, we believe that there was no explosion in the place where the intelligence authorities have previously suspected that there were signs of an explosion. We believe that the explosion described by the North Korea took place in Samsu country, about 100 kilometers or 60 miles from the originally suspected site, and has to do with hydroelectric projects, he said, and on it goes. And it basically, the diplomats from Britain, the Czech Republic, Germany, Mongolia, Poland, and so on, traveled to this area. They were able to take photographs, but they reckon it wasn't the place that it was actually occurred. But as I say, the fact that the Americans are saying no, it wasn't nuclear, and the fact that Korea also is allowing people into the area, and it's not contaminated, the fact that there was another bomb that also went off, or something went off in Korea, if you remember North Korea, which also didn't seem to be nuclear, but had devastating effects. The fact that something similar to that went off over in Iran as well, that also gives the indication there is something else going on. This is what I say, that as Christ says here, the Christ that doesn't change, he says, look, when it's evening, you look and you see that it's red, it's going to be fair weather. When it's morning and it's red, it's going to be stormy today. If you can discern the time, signs of the times, why not the signs of the times now? And again, we need to be looking at what in fact is going on. We know that the cities are going to be devastated. We also know they're going to be devastated by Germany or by the European Union. Now, London, to be devastated that way, I mean, would you drop a hydrogen bomb on London if you were the European Union? When it's likely to blow right back into your face? It doesn't seem to make sense. It doesn't seem to have the same... It just doesn't seem to make sense. But, you know, there are other things that are going on as well. And I started looking online as to what, in fact, is known. And, again, how much do we know about what is going on in the other area? Because where you're not looking at radioactive fallout, but you're looking at a devastation similar to a hydrogen weapon. From the Scotsman, this was back in August 2003, it says, the arms race fear over a new bomb. This is by a man called John Innes. It says, US scientists are working on a space-age weapon that experts fear could trigger a new arms race, it was claimed last night. The gamma ray bomb blurs the lines between conventional and nuclear explosives. It produces an enormous burst of energy from atoms without involving nuclear fission or fusion. A gamma ray bomb. Just 1 gram of the explosive could store more energy than 50 kilograms of TNT. A gamma bomb would produce little fallout compared to a normal nuclear weapon, although undetonated particles could cause long-term health problems. It says, Dr. André Gasponna, the director of the Independent Scientific Research Institute in Geneva, believes countries without such weapons would not be able to fight ones that possess them. Now, this is now, it's talking really about a fourth generation of weapons. You see, when Mr. Armstrong looked at the world, he looked at the world with the weaponry that was there at the time. We see what is now in China. We see what it says about the army that's coming across, about climbing up into the windows and so on. And we see robotics today that we couldn't see necessarily at that time. We can see a different type of infantry, almost like an infantryman, but it's not, it's a robotic infantryman, perhaps with somebody inside it, but who knows? It may well be something like that. But there's also a fourth generation of nuclear weapons as well. Now, this is a technical... You remember this man, André Gasponna, the director of the Independent Scientific Research Institute in Geneva, when he... I looked up certain things that he had done. And here is a report. It says, the fourth generation nuclear weapons, the physical principles of thermonuclear explosives, in inertial confinement fusion, and the quest for fourth generation nuclear weapons. Now, thermonuclear explosive, you're looking at the atomic bomb. Inertial confinement fusion, you're looking at the hydrogen bomb. You confine the initial atomic bomb as it goes through the deuterium for a certain length of time, which then causes the hydrogen explosion, but also the quest for fourth generation nuclear weapons. What he has to say is quite alarming. The actual report, first of all, it goes into first, second generation nuclear weapon technology, and then a summary on the current research directed into weapons available physics to go with the fourth generation nuclear weapons. And in commenting about this fourth chapter, it says the fourth chapter is devoted to fourth generation nuclear weapons. These new fission or fusion explosives could have yields up to the range of 1 to 100 tons equivalent of TNT, i.e. in the gap which today separates conventional weapons from nuclear weapons, so they're smaller. These relatively low-yield nuclear explosives would not qualify as weapons as mass destruction. So what can you do? You can experiment with those. You can actually use them. 7, physical processes which could be used to make such low-yield nuclear weapons or to make compact non-fission triggers for large-scale thermonuclear explosions. So these are the triggers. The triggers are an atomic bomb at the moment for a hydrogen bomb. But you don't need an atomic bomb to start a hydrogen bomb with the fourth-generation weapons. That's what he's saying. Are investigated in detail. Subcritical fission burn is one of them, magnetic compression, super heavy elements, antimatter, where you put antimatter and matter together and it creates a void such as you've never seen, the whole lot, you know, nuclear isomers, metallic hydrogen, where you compress hydrogen to such a degree that it becomes a metal. And this metal has superconductive qualities. And super lasers, i.e. ultra-powerful lasers with intensities higher than 10 to the 19 watts per square centimetre. That's a phenomenal laser. The conclusion stresses that considerable research is underway in all 5 nuclear weapon states, as well as in several other major industrial states, such as Germany and Japan. Now, what happened in the Second World War? The British, the Americans and so on, came with World War I technology against Germany, who had the new technology. Exactly the same thing is happening again. On ICF and in many physical processes that provide the scientific basis necessary to develop fourth generation nuclear weapons. Substantial progress has been made in the past few years on all these processes, and the construction of large ICF micro-explosion facilities in both nuclear weapons and non-nuclear weapons states is giving the arms race a fresh boost. But this is a warning coming out of Geneva about what is actually going on, and this was dated in 1999. So what has happened between then? So what is going on in North Korea? Do you see what I mean? The world, notice what it says, the world runs the risk that certain countries will equip themselves directly with fourth generation nuclear weapons, bypassing the acquisition of previous generations of nuclear weapons. In this context, the invention of the super laser, which enabled a factor of 1 million increase in the instantaneous power of tabletop lasers, so they're a million times the power of tabletop lasers, of ordinary lasers, is possibly the most significant advance in military technology in the past 10 years. This increase is of the same magnitude as a factor of 1 million difference in the energy density between chemical and nuclear energy. So from ordinary lasers to super lasers, the difference between them is the same between a chemical TNT and a hydrogen or nuclear bomb. That's the difference. A major arms control problem of fourth generation nuclear weapons is that their development is very closely related to pure scientific research. Do you know where I got this thing from? This is from Darmstadt University of Technology in Germany. Okay. In the US News and World Report, I think it's worth taking another 10 minutes to do this, because the actual thing we'll have today is lasts an hour and a quarter. But this is coming from the US News and World Report on October the 13th, 2003. It says, to most people, what makes nuclear weapons so frightening is their immense power. But many more arms control experts think that the scariest nukes are the small ones which could conceivably be used on the battlefield. And it goes on to explain, it says, the activists and researchers say that in the long run, the green light for research could also give boost to an entirely new mini-nuke called a pure fusion bomb. By condoning mini-nukes, you are opening the door to building ever more advanced nukes such as pure fusion weapons, says Jay Collihan of Nuclear Watch in New Mexico. It says, pure fusion bombs could be more compact than today's nuclear weapons and yield almost no fallout. Current devices get most of their power from hydrogen atoms fusing together. But it takes a mighty match, a fission blast, to spark the process. So you've got to have a nuclear weapon in the center to start the fusion going. You have a fission weapon that starts the fusion. And fission means fallout. So when you get a hydrogen bomb, the blast is coming from the fusion, but the fallout comes from the fission that actually starts the process. A pure fusion weapon, using these super lasers, would emit plenty of killing radiation, but as a short-lived neutrons. You can move your troops in within 48 hours, and what happened in North Korea? They were into the area very soon, because there'd be no fallout, said the Institute of Energy and Environmental Research in Tacoma Park. That's a military advantage, but it could lower the threshold for using these weapons. Fission also requires a critical mass of plutonium and uranium, but without it, pure fusion weapons can be as small as you like, virtually atomic bullets, says Andre Gispona, which is the one we just read from, of the Independent Scientific Research Institute in Geneva. Okay, let's just read one more. And this one is quite scary. And that is, it's from the International Network of Engineers and Scientists Against Proliferation. And the headline is, Super Laser Development in Germany. Okay? So super lasers, also called petawatt lasers, are ultra-powerful lasers with intensities higher than 10 to the power of 19 watts per square centimeter and powers up to 1,000 terawatts, which is a petawatt. Okay? So now you know. Such lasers are capable of generating nuclear reactions directly, i.e. they can directly fission heavy nuclei, such as uranium, initiate thermonuclear fusion reactions, and create antimatter and generate intense, well-focused ion beams, etc. Now, this is coming from an institute of engineers and scientists against proliferation. The invention of a super laser, which enables a factor of 1 million increase in the instantaneous power of tabletop lasers, is probably the most significant advance in military technology of the past 15 years. Now, this is actually written by Andre Gispona. So, you're looking at something which, you know, is certainly up to date in that regard. Super lasers may actually have potential applications in nuclear weapons. It goes on about that. The whole subject of super laser research and development is presently a domain of a very intense activity. In the past few years, new institutes and specialized laboratories have been created in several countries. For example, the Max Born Institute for Nick Schleiner Optik and all the rest of it in Berlin, Adelshof, Germany. That is one of the main ones. It says all the most advanced industrial countries now have super lasers with powers of at least 10 terawatts, and 100 to 1,000 terawatt super lasers are under construction. In Germany, the Atomic and Plasma Physics Department of GSI Darmstadt have started a petawatt high-energy glass laser project called Felix as a joint venture together with the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, that's in California, and the Max Born Institute in Berlin, offering pulse energies up to 5 kilojoules in nanosecond pulses or alternative petawatt peak power in pulses of less than 500, and it goes and gives details. Felix will be among the world's leading super laser facilities. Now, when you put that, notice it says, since Germany is a non-nuclear weapon state, it is politically very disturbing that Felix will be built in collaboration with the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, and there will be a cooperative agreement between GSI and LNI, will be similar and so on between French and British nuclear weapons laboratories. But you're looking at Germany as probably the leader in the world in super lasers. And with super lasers, you can then generate hydrogen weapons without nuclear fallout, but with the blast capacity of the hydrogen bomb. And they are the fourth generation. And you can also make them as small as you like. So you can test them. You could test them, something that has a 2 mile wide a mushroom cloud, and say, oh, we're just destroying a mountain. And you can do it that way because it is controllable. You can cause fission to take place by the bombardment of lasers. And these things was started in the 90s, and this was the fourth generation, the fourth wave. Now, as I say, when you look at what happened in Germany and what happened between Germany and the Allies at that time, you find that exactly the same thing happened. Germany had weapons which we did not have. And so that is the case today. We're looking at the fourth generation. And I thought it'd be worthwhile at least pointing that out to you, and again, getting us all to just think a little bit, because when you're looking at what happened in North Korea, I don't believe we're looking at something that we've seen before necessarily. And that's something that is very significant. And if it's cheap to make, this is the point. If these things are cheap to make, if they're made because they're electronically based, and you know what electronics are like, you bring the price down with mass production, that man in North Korea could threaten the entire area. It could take out Japan. It could take over China, the actual influence that it could have in China. And you have a threat in the world like as nothing we've ever seen before. And there's also links between Aden. Remember the links between Aden, the ship going from Aden with nuclear parts for North Korea? You don't remember that a few years ago? Well, there's links across into the Arab world. And if these things are cheap, they could take out every single city. So, watch this space. And we are living in interesting times.